Honey, are you feeling guilty right now?
No, because I'm recording this podcast with my beautiful wife.
That's cap. I think we do, because it's a Saturday and it's kind of nice outside, and it's one of the first spring days, and we're not taking our children out. We put them in front of a screen so we can record this podcast.
Yeah, if you put it that way, I do feel a little guilty now.
But you know what? That's what this episode is about. So let's get over this guilt quickly. So like you heard, this episode of Parents Uninterrupted, it's about this common emotion we parents all feel, literally about everything in today's world. That is the guilt we feel of being parents. And we're hoping to use this episode to talk about when we feel guilt and also to help each other to get over this useless emotion that doesn't actually do anything and prevents us actually to live a fulfilling life.
I would really agree with you on that point.
Welcome to episode 6 of Parents Uninterrupted. And this is a podcast that will help you to live a fulfilling life as parents while you're raising children. I'm Rose.
And I'm Ethan.
Let's talk about guilt. So, when do we feel guilty? Wait. Let me just give you a running list. Like, I could just.
I was gonna say, so we don't have too much time, so that running list better be short. Because it can go on and on and on forever.
That's true. That's true. We feel guilty about, often we feel guilty about doing too little for our kids, and we feel guilty about going to work if you're a working parent. We feel guilty of spending time to enjoy ourselves while we're not spending time with them. And a lot of times we also feel guilty for yelling at them when they're not behaving, when we're supposed to stay calm. And we feel guilty feeling certain ways about them. Like sometimes I find my kids annoying.
Wow. So I noticed when you were listing all those points of guilt that you used the reference we. And I don't know if that holds true between both like men and women and how we perceive or how we feel guilty.
What do you mean? Like, you feel guilty all the time. Like, don't tell me you don't feel guilty.
I feel guilty sometimes, but not all the time. And I definitely do not feel as guilty as you, where sometimes you will feel guilt for years.
I know. That could be a little bit of my personality, but I do feel like women, mothers feel more guilty than fathers most of the time. I wonder what that is. I think it could be something like the pressure society puts on moms and the expectations they set for moms. Like, literally, we are expected to put our kids first because we give birth to them. Like, if you just read the materials out there, or even people who are really accomplished in career and other aspects of life, when women give a speech and they would say, "Oh, my most important job is being a mom." I don't disagree, but it does create this like level of expectation for women that not only they have to be domestically capable, loving parents, they also sometimes in today's society have the need to bring home the bacon. Or if they're really good at something other than parenting and they still have to be perfect parents at the same time. I definitely feel that pressure.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I'll give you a great example. I would say that, and this is what society would kind of view things as. Like, if I'm pushing our kid down the street and our son is crying, I think most people would say, "Oh, look at that dad. He's trying so hard to take his kid out for a walk. Like, look at what a great job he's doing." But on the reverse side, if the mother is pushing the baby down the street and the baby's crying, people all of a sudden feel sorry for this kid and ask, like, what's that mother doing that's not right? So I think even society's putting this unwanted pressure and this view of guilt onto mothers more than they do for fathers.
Yeah, I definitely do feel that. And you know what? And it's not a speculation because like in my later episodes I will actually talk about this a little more in detail, but I was actually stopped in real life pushing a stroller by another judgy person thinking that I was somehow leaving my child cry forever and ever or something like that.
And I would just like to add that I remember one day I was pushing Blake down Bay Street, taking him to the daycare, and I was actually stopped by a couple of people saying, "Oh, you guys look so cute together. You're doing such a great job taking your son to daycare." And I thought to myself, wow, I am, aren't I?
Yeah, it's funny how that works. But you know what? Today's episode is not about the way society sees women or mothers or fathers differently. It's about how all of us collectively, that we do feel this guilt about being a parent, then how do we get over it? Because let's face it, feeling guilty is one of those most useless emotions ever. Like, it doesn't really help you to become a better parent.
Useless.
And it doesn't help us live a happier life, right? And then it's not like you're doing anything about it. It's simply emotion that is there that prevents you to be actually present with what you're doing and enjoying it.
Yeah, because then oftentimes the feeling of guilt lingers so long. And like Rose says, it doesn't allow you to be present. And you're actually constantly thinking about what you did wrong and, you know, what you could have done different than enjoying the moment.
So to get over this feeling of guilt, we have to, like, to be able to have some kind of actionable items, right? Like, to take some action, some actions as solutions, so we could see things differently or provide ourselves a different perspective so that we would get over this feeling. But in order to make that easier, I have, like, thought about this, and I kind of simplify. There are two types of guilt usually a parent feels. The first type is we feel guilty about the choices we made as parents. So I'm talking about, you know, the mothers or the dads that choose to be working full time instead of raising their children full time. And they often feel quite guilty going to work, or at least a little bit, at least at the beginning when the children are very young and small, where you have to pass them to nannies or daycare. Sometimes that we even feel guilty about the parenting choices we made. Like, you know, those out there with babies who don't sleep well, you know, you have different options, like sleep training your child, letting them cry it out, or, you know, not sleep training, and you can breastfeed or you cannot breastfeed. And then you sometimes make a choice, one choice versus the other. And then you feel quite guilty about that one choice for whatever reason. And the other type of guilt we often feel is more momentary. It's more of we yelled at our kids, we lost our temper, or we kind of behaved not the way we wanted ourselves to behave. Or in hindsight, we should have not done that. And then that's the time that we feel like, oh, we feel a bit guilty for what we've done.
And a choice that you made recently and or you feel really guilty about is even something small like packing Blake's lunch. So there were times where you felt that you felt guilty you weren't giving him a nutritious meal, so that you had to ensure that you packed him a big variety of different foods so that he could have this nutritious diet so he can actually grow normally as a child.
Oh, yeah, I remember. You know what? It's funny. You know, I observed that when we talk about these things, it's always Blake, it's never Scarlett. So just cue the audience. Honestly, you experiment everything with your first child and you feel all the myriad different emotions with your first child and the guilt and all that. And then with the second one, I have to say you are a little bit more experienced and laid back because you kind of have a get you know, have a hang of things. And hopefully you are just in a better mental state. But anyway, so with my first child, Blake, I wanted to make sure I was his model mom. You know, if I had to be at the office for most of the time away from him, the least I could do is pack him a super nutritious lunch. So I invested in this, like, oh my God, it was expensive. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it was like $150.
Not $150, but something like $100 lunchbox, because I got tricked by all these Instagram ads of these moms packing like their kids' lunch in like a metal bento box with all these veggies and fruits and the little rice balls that look like pandas and all those like things, right? So I got tricked into that, and I went into, I researched my recipes and all, and I pack them all these like lunches every day. I got up early to do it, and then I took pictures of them, and like all the other moms who were bragging, and sometimes I was so proud of myself, I took an Instagram photo and posted it as well. And guess what? Blake never really ate them much. They came back a lot of times pretty full.
Yep, and that bento box that you spent $150 on, I think was basically used for maybe, what, a month before it got destroyed by Blake in his backpack.
I know, like, that was like lesson learned, right? Like, today I can just honestly say I'm not the one who packs lunches because it really frustrates the hell out of me. And Ethan does it, and Dad sometimes gives them a little bit of like a hot dog or something that they actually enjoy eating, even though it's not the best nutritional value. So they prefer Daddy's lunches. So I just kind of leave that to my husband without feeling guilty anymore. So how do we get away from this guilt? Two ways. I think the first thing is acceptance. So this really means that we need to stand by our decision and be confident why we made that decision and drown out all the noises and expectations other people and society expects of us. So that goes both for women and men. I'm going to give an example of, again, this working thing, because I think this working thing was one of the biggest choices I ever had to make as a mom, especially when my kids were little. And I think I kind of mentioned it briefly in the previous podcast that Blake also had needed more attention than the average child. So I really struggle with this. But again, at the end of the day, it was a choice made by our circumstantial situation. And also, that's not the only factor, because there are enough things that you could do or change in your life to make it happen if you really wanted to. That's what I believe. Also, because carefully thinking and looking at what I am capable as a human being out there, and mother being part of me being a human, not all of me being a human, and I really truly believed my capacities to do something different would be able to contribute to our family and our society better and more than me staying home full time and doing the lunches and the laundry and all that. That's not to say other people are the same, but it's just for me, like the way I am and the what I could do at work and things, I think would put our family in a better position. And then also for me, it would ultimately mean a better contribution to this world than just, you know, than me just being a full-time mom. I'm not particularly good at a lot of the playing with kids type of activities. I could force myself, like, you know, shave myself into a shoehorn.
No, you're not that good. The kids don't have much fun with you.
Well, thanks, hon. I think at different ages now they do have a lot more fun. And I have to say our son and I have quite interesting intellectual conversations sometimes. But I'm just not that great, and I don't fully enjoy that. And I think when I'm not enjoying it and I don't feel I'm living my life in a fulfilled way, it really shows and reflects in the things in the everyday. And so we've made the decision for me to go out there and work and then pass our children to daycare at the time to take care of. So accepting that decision was a journey for me. And I think it was harder. It was easier the second time around than the first. It was definitely harder. But there was a lot of noise out there. Not only, you know, you watch TV and you hear these things and what's expected of you. Like, you know, even our opinions coming from your mother, like my own mother-in-law.
The in-laws, they don't do you any favors in this regard.
Yeah, like I had to actually answer my own mother-in-law or, you know, Ethan's side of the family, why they see the woman's place is to fully dedicate herself raising children. And they couldn't understand why, you know, with my husband at the time with a stable job, I couldn't do that or I didn't want to do that. So then, you know, it really makes you at times feel kind of guilty because they feel like, oh, they eat cold lunches. They don't eat hot lunches. And you're supposed to provide them hot lunches or you're supposed to do this and that. But I think that, you know, but we regardless of what you're feeling guilty about. Maybe you're pursuing a hobby. Maybe you're a fantastic painter as a hobby, that you really want to take some painting courses, or maybe you're a yoga enthusiast, and then you want to, once in a while or even a regular basis, want to get away to a yoga retreat and be away from your family and children sometimes. And I don't think it's wrong to do that. I think it's absolutely essential for us to recharge ourselves, and as long as logistically you can work it out, and to live that fulfilling life. At the end of the day, and I think no one knows ourselves better, and no one knows how your time and effort and energy and talent are best contributed to a certain things. So I would just say, you know, we work on standing by our decision and be confident, drown out the noise, and just, you know, really try to be present and enjoy the choice that we've made.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would say that no one knows you better than you. So you'll understand what's best for yourself. You'll be doing things that's best for yourself and for your children, and drown out all, like Rose said, all that noise and all that drama that may be making you feel guiltier than you really should.
The second part of how we can totally get over this feeling of guilt is a very important life lesson I learned. And some time ago, a life coach actually kind of taught me this. So this is really understanding the yin and yang, the balancing forces of life.
Wait a second. Is this like Star Wars with the bright light side and the dark side?
It's kind of like that. Maybe that explains why our whole family is such a big Star Wars fan. Star Wars definitely kind of puts it in somewhat of a philosophical level, where, you know, every person has to kind of balance the desire from the dark side and the light side. But when it comes to, okay, the reality of parenting in our lives, I think the yin and yang is simply to recognize that, you know, sometimes we feel if we plan certain things a certain way and we don't get what we wanted, or the outcome on the surface is not what we hope it to be, and we think it's a bad thing, right? But there's always a balancing force in the universe on the other side. So sometimes in language, we kind of call it the flip side. And, you know, people find the silver lining under things. It's not as simple as that. I think it's what's visible to us because of our own desire is the outcome that's related to our expectation. But there's a whole layer of the other side of balancing force that we don't see, or maybe we're not aware of, that actually make it not bad. And vice versa, when certain things we feel like it's exactly the way we planned and it's going so well and it's just fantastic, I think there's always an underbelly of a balancing force somewhere that you have to kind of be aware of a little bit. So I'll give you an example. As a working mom, again, I'm talking about my own struggles. When I'm away and I think my kids are not getting the same attention that I could have given them if I stayed home, then you wonder, right? You wonder what you're not doing that's impacting your children in the negative way. Like, you know, the lacking of attention. I remember my kids were quite tired from the after school care when I picked them up, and they were very like prone to tantrums during dinner time. And you know, I questioned whether the whole daycare situation was even good for them and all that stuff. So now, as they've grown a little bit older, I also realized there is that whole flip side of things. When we were not there, we actually forced these kids to be a little bit more independent, to be away, to have that time and space, to be away from their parents and to completely be their own individuals and try to socialize with other kids and build relationships other than the relationships with their mom and dad. And when they had problems, and instead of running home and asking mom and dad, and they can obviously ask the teachers and stuff, but they don't get the same level of attention, so they try to have to figure it out themselves. So as a result of us not being constantly present, they're strengthening and growing a certain areas of muscles that they would have otherwise not grown. So I think eventually this would contribute to their independence and their problem-solving skills in a positive way. Obviously, there is a yin and yang with every choice you make. So if I had stayed at home, I think there's also a yin-yang side that we always have to recognize, right? So which goes to say that whatever choice you make that's best for you, you are lacking something, you're feeling guilty about something, but there is definitely that positive side that is not, that may not be immediately visible to you.
Yeah, as Rose mentioned, that positiveness that might come out from your decision, it actually might be months, years, even many years down the road where you actually see the outcome of it. But there is that balance and there is that benefit out of that.
And this even goes to like the momentary guilt we feel when we behave badly, right? Like when our kids...
I never behave badly.
Ethan is...
I'm a saint.
Ethan is generally really, really good with the kids. But a difference from me is like, yes, I'm definitely the disciplinarian and I'm the one that give all these lectures and speeches and, you know, put their restrictions in place between the two of us. But Ethan is like, you know, he holds it in and he doesn't say anything. He let it fester and sometimes then he just gets so mad at the kids that out of nowhere he gets really upset. And the kids is like, what did I do? Like, why is dad so upset? So it's like definitely two different approaches.
Yeah, guilty on that one. I'm like a big volcano.
Well, so this just goes to say, like, you know, our personalities and the way we do, and we were not perfect, right? So nobody is, no parent is. And sometimes it's just really difficult. We lecture our kids to control their own temper and to act calm, but sometimes it's hard for us to do so. And we lose it, definitely, sometimes. Or we, how do I put it? We preferred ourselves to act in a better way or to act like the role model we always wanted ourselves to be. And when that doesn't happen or when we lose our temper, we feel really guilty about the way we reacted. But I would use the same logic and the yin and yang in this, that we always feel it's a bad thing that we displayed, you know, a less than perfect side to our children. I totally would argue that. I think being human beings living together, especially in this pandemic, we're literally like 24/7. It's important for kids to also understand some of the struggles adults have. It's important for the kids to see the real side of you. And, you know, sometimes adults also behave badly, that we're not perfect. It's okay for the kids to see, you know, humans are not perfections. And even parents make mistakes. And I think that is an important life lesson. And it relieves a little bit of the stress and the desire for themselves to want to be perfect, as well that, you know, it, I think, bonds us even closer in a way that, you know, look, you know, mommy and daddy are teaching you this, but we're working on it ourselves as well. So it's important for us to, when we do these things, like, you know, lose our temper, to come back with the proper steps of correction. So we can also show our kids, this is how you remedy a situation, right? So I think those are all very positive things. Imagine what psychological factor it would have on a child growing up to be in a household where parents are absolutely perfect. I think that's kind of scary.
Yeah, it sure is. Now, I think you're going to share with everybody a story, right? I think the story is called Bob and the Butterfly.
I don't know where Bob comes from. You're so funny, the way your brain works. It's like a scientist and the butterfly.
Can we just call the scientist Bob then?
I like the scientist has a real name. I just don't remember what the name is.
Then we'll call him Bob.
Oh, gosh. Anyways, okay, so fine. I'll go along with this.
Bob it is.
Let's just call the scientist Bob. But his name is, I don't think it's Bob. I just really don't remember. There was a scientist, and I forgot the special, like how there's a name for this kind of specialist where they study insects. So there's a scientist, and his specialty is like studying insects. And I think this happened about 100 years ago. So he had all the different kind of like live insects and specimens, and he had like a lab and everything. So he was observing the behavior of insects and, you know, doing research and documenting them and recording it in his diary. So he was doing this project of observing
butterflies.
Yes. So caterpillars making cocoon and becoming butterflies, like this whole process. And he was documenting the very specific observations of this process. So what he found was when the butterfly formed to be a butterfly inside that cocoon, and then it would try to come out of that cocoon when it's time, it's actually a very painful, agonizing process for the butterfly to come out. So when the butterfly started moving, and it's a constant motion of pushing the cocoon, you know, trying to make it open, and it's like this struggle. And I think it lasts some time between like 24 to 48 hours, and it like nonstop. Don't quote me on it. I'm not an expert, but that's, I think, what I remember reading. So when the scientists observed this whole process, and, you know, time after time, and it just seems so painful, and just like the constant trying, and he actually started feeling sorry for the butterfly. So he, at one time, and he felt like this sympathy towards this one particular butterfly, and that was trying to come out. And I think at that point, his sympathy kind of boiled over to a point where his human compassion just completely took over him. So he used a pair of scissors, and he cut open the cocoon, and to let the butterfly come out a lot easier. And guess what happened after?
What?
So after he cut open the cocoon and the butterfly came out, to his astonishment, this butterfly tried to fly, but the wings were somewhat weak and the butterfly couldn't fly properly, and it actually died soon after.
That counters my common logic to say, if you're going to help the butterfly come out of the cocoon quicker, maybe it doesn't exert as much energy, so it can easily fly away.
Yeah, not so. So I think he meant well, but he was quite surprised by that. And it wasn't like he completely just cut it open right at the beginning. He simply shortened the period of agony of the butterfly trying to come out. So then what he learned was that whole process of pain and resistance and trying and, you know, failing for a long period of time was essential for butterfly survival. So that through this process, they would strengthen their wings in a short period of time to allow them to be able to fly, to be able to survive. So this was a really great story. Not only I think about this, about myself and where it applies in my own life, and I think it's particularly helpful to think about this as a parent. Because I think in today's society that we try so hard to do a good job as a parent, and we try to provide to them, we try to reduce or eliminate a lot of the roadblocks they face in life, and to make their problems go away. We are that scientist that's cutting away their cocoon, and we don't give them enough chance to expand their wings and to experience pain and to try to push against that and make a comeback and eventually strengthen those muscles needed for survival. So I think it kind of applies in each person's situation differently, but I would just really leave that food for thought. So when we do feel guilty about something, just remember, they may be the butterflies in the process of strengthening their wings.
That's such a great story, and I really liked how that can be portrayed into our day-to-day lives. You failed to mention Bob a number of times. I just wanna
His name is not Bob.
I just want to point that out to you.
This concludes the episode for today. And thank you for letting us being part of your day today. Until next time.
Make sure you like, subscribe, and leave comments. That would really help us with our podcasts. Thanks again, folks. Have a great day.